Kia ora and welcome to Emergence News. My name is Nigel and welcome to this special edition of Emergence News. Special because I suspect this is the first program we've done dedicated to Madame Helena Blavatsky. And she was a controversial figure in her lifetime, and her two most well-known publications have remained influential. Let's find out more from Peter and John. Good morning. Greetings, men.
Good morning.
Good morning, Nigel.
John, Madame Blavatsky, she was a colourful character.
I think Madame Blavatsky was a person out of her time and therefore copped constant
derision.
Derision, almost hate, and possibly a polarising personality. And people either loved her or hated her. There was no in between.
She wasn't your typical quiet, serene, New Age spiritual seeker.
I found trying to get any sort of information on her really difficult because there's this constant polarisation. And the other thing that I find really contradictory is people that write about her and profess to know her and speak with authority also admit there was very little written about her and very little known about her. So, you know, there's just this constant contradiction. But anyway, I'll cover that off a little bit.
Yes, so you're going to lead the charge here. You're going to be the captain of the ship today, John. Peter, before John gets going, Helena Blavatsky, in 1888, she published The Secret Doctrine. This huge volume of work could be described as providing a deeper theosophical understanding of ourselves and the world around us.
That's right. And she'd published Isis Unveiled before that.
In 1877, just 2 years.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was two book series as well. Very in-depth about our history. But she was Ray One Soul, and so she's bound to be controversial.
Powerful.
Yeah, because she says what she thinks, and let's face it, she was a fourth degree initiate. So what she thinks actually matters.
I think, you're very true, Peter.
That's a great point.
But also at the time, we've got to think about the time that she lived in. And, you know, this constant, whatever you read about her, this constant guessing on her gender. And, you know, accused of being transvestite, accused of being a lesbian because she did not conform to the norm of the time. But what fourth degree initiate does?
No, that's right.
By the time you get to a fourth degree initiate, nothing matters.
No, that's right. You don't actually care what someone else says.
So, but, you know, when you look at when she was born, Peter, and the times that she lived in Victorian Europe, clearly she was always going to cop constant criticism. And I found actually researching that for this program a little bit unpleasant. You know, you've got to be very discerning where you go.
John, interesting what you said about the gender prejudice, because we're now in 2026 and here in New Zealand we have still got influential politicians who are unbelievably prejudiced against anybody who isn't normal.
Look, I think if Blavatsky appeared today, she would be much more acceptable. A, because she'd be on social media. And the problem I had with Blavatsky is journalists wrote about her. And they couldn't say good things, could they?
No.
So they had to say, discovered in brackets, all sorts of things about her.
Yeah.
So I just think that she was such a unique individual person that the men of the time could not tolerate her.
That's right. And she was quite forthright in demolishing their arguments.
Oh. I mean, I'll read from her biographer, Peter Washington, about what she was like. And in fact, I'll start with that now. This is Peter Washington in 1993. And I've gone to Wikipedia. And the reason I went to Wikipedia is I was kind of able to sift the good and the bad. Benjamin Krem, I've gone through the three Maitreya's mission books. He doesn't talk much about Blavatsky, interestingly enough, but he gives her kudos. Anyway, this is Peter Washington, 1993. He's describing Blavatsky, and it does not surprise me that she annoyed every man on the planet. Blavatsky talked incessantly in a guttural voice. Not a good thing for a woman in the times, right?
And smoking cigars.
Sometimes wittily and sometimes crudely. She was indifferent to sex, yet frank and open about it. Fonder of animals than people, welcoming, unpretentious, scandalous, capricious, and rather noisy. She was also humorous, vulgar, impulsive, and warm-hearted, and didn't give a hoot about anyone or anything. Mm. So in the 1890s, there is nothing there that the male-dominated society of Europe would have found interesting about her.
Or acceptable.
Or acceptable. And he goes on to talk about how she dressed, and he's interesting. He's very interesting.
She found a great friend in Henry Steele Olcott.
Yes.
And they nicknamed each other. He was nicknamed Maloney and she was nicknamed Jack. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
And they did so much travel together. Yep. They founded the Theosophical Society.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they toured through Europe. And she ended up in the last 3 years of her life, John, in a wheelchair in London.
Yeah, and being looked after by Annie Besant.
Yes.
Yeah, Besant, who went on to find Krishnamurti, right? So the connection between those two, I would love to have had tea at their place. You know, it would have been purely Victorian tea. But you would have had this person in the corner of Blavatsky talking incessantly in a guttural voice, sometimes utterly and sometimes crudely. She would have been so much fun to be around.
Yes, and entertaining. And it became the Blavatsky Lodge?
Yeah, Blavatsky Society.
And that was the part of the headquarters in London.
Yeah.
At the time.
Yeah.
Yep. Because the Theosophical Society in its prime had 121 lodges globally.
Yep.
106 of those were in India, Burma, and Sri Lanka, known as Ceylon in those days. Yep. So Asia welcomed Theosophy.
I think because they saw her take on life as fitting in with Hinduism and Buddhism.
Mm.
And so she was much more acceptable to that mindset than to the European devoutly Christian, male-dominated religious thinking of the time. So that would be to me why she clashed so much in the West, because she challenged male-dominated Christian thinking of the time. There was no way she was going to be acceptable. The other thing I think that the Theosophy Society lost credibility is, for reasons that I don't truly understand, they recruited heavily in the white, educated, almost European royalty, nobility. And of course, as soon as you got those people in, they wanted to do things their own way. So early Theosophy fractured constantly. They argued with each other. They disagreed with each other. So Blavatsky, I think, just walked away from it because, as you said earlier, Peter, a fourth degree initiate, what do they care?
Mm.
You know, you've got to think about Krishnamurti's quote, "I don't mind what happens."
Yes. And of course,
there's such a detachment there.
It was right in the middle of the Industrial Revolution, too, which was so materialistic. It's almost like the opposite to spirituality.
Yeah. And Blavatsky's been accused of being on a world mission to save the world through Theosophy. She wasn't on a world mission, I don't think, to save the world through Theosophy. She was on a world mission to save the world.
Yes.
And, of course, when you're a fourth-degree initiate, your drive, and she was a Ray One
soul.
Her drive must have been offensive to some people.
And Ray One mental.
Yeah. And Ray One mental. She was. She would have come across as almost indestructible.
And also another reason why she would have been derided by the journalists is because they would have been confused. She's talking about – she was a disciple of the Master Moria.
Yeah.
As was Helena Roerich, also from Russia a few years later. Now, when somebody is in communication – transcendent communication with a master, there's a lot of people out there that don't But not only do they not understand that, they find it confusing.
Mm, that's right, and easily deniable.
Yes. In their
way of thinking, yeah.
And you can imagine the theosophists, many of them would have been saying, well, if you're in contact with these masters, okay, can we meet them? Can we see them? And, of course, she hasn't got time to do that.
Yeah.
She's on a mission.
Yeah, very much on a mission. And I think, unfortunately, the Theosophical Society fractured underneath her mission, and I think she lost interest in it.
She was just too powerful.
She was just too powerful, Peter. Mm. But the people, particularly in Western Europe and Britain, the people that Theosophy attracted always brought with them their own flavour and their own intelligence and their own sense of entitlement. So I think Blavatsky would have been constantly in conflict with the very people she was recruiting.
So you can see why Krishnamurti eventually
just walked away from
away from Theosophy as well.
Yeah. Okay, so once again, I'm still in the wiki, and as I said, I went here because I was able to kind of discern a little better. This guy, Peter Washington, who's her biographer, one of her biographers, described Blavatsky as a short, stout, forceful woman with strong arms, several chins, unruly hair, determined mouth, and large, liquid, slightly bulging eyes. So imagine that arriving in Victorian England. She had distinctive azure-coloured eyes and was overweight throughout her life. Another biographer, Marion Mead, described Blavatsky's general appearance as outrageously untidy. In her later life, she was known for wearing loose robes and wore many rings on her fingers. She was a heavy cigarette smoker throughout her life and at times smoked hashish. She lived simply, and her followers believed that she refused to accept monetary payment in return for disseminating her teachings. Benjamin Krem did the same thing. Blavatsky preferred to be known by her initials, and I guess she just ruffled social feathers, particularly in that Western world. She avoided social functions and was scornful of social obligations. So once again, she would have been in constant conflict with the very people she was recruiting or were coming into Theosophy, the wealthy, the educated, the white, affluent nobility of Europe and Britain. Mead refers to her as an eccentric who abided by no rules except her own, and she had utter disregard for the Victorian code of morality. So there's no way she was going to get treated well by the media at the time. So I found the Wikipedia, like a lot of stuff I discovered around Blavatsky, is really contradictory. And lots of people jump on and criticise her, but actually, at the very end, under the heading Western Esotericism, Blavatsky's Theosophy has been described as representing a major factor in the modern revival of Western Esotericism.
Mm.
So, and she's described as no more important figure in modern times within the Western esoteric tradition. So for all of this feathers that she ruffled, her message got through. Mm,
she was like a foundation block, wasn't she, Peter? She was at the very vanguard, you know, with the Theosophy, for example. You know, she was at the very vanguard of the New Age movement.
Oh, that's right. I mean, and so detached from, you know, what anyone else thought about her or her message or anything. She couldn't care less.
Look, when you think about what her mission may have been as a fourth degree initiate, firstly, as a fourth degree initiate, she's suffering constantly as she burns up karma heading towards the fifth initiation, so illness and ridicule. I suspect part of her karmic debt was this ridicule that she was constantly under pressure from. But then they go on to say practically all modern occultism and esotericism can trace its origins back to her influence. She has been credited with that revival of occultism in the Western mindset. that may have been her mission.
Mm.
Remember, Krem has described her as preparatory for the return of the masters.
Mm.
So she's come first with the story of there is another way to live and another way to manage the planet, and our religions have missed the point.
Mm.
So she's upset everyone except people that work closely with her.
Yes, and another master that she met and worked closely with was Kutumi.
Yes.
Right. In Tibet. And
yep.
And her time in Tibet is reasonably well documented there too, John.
Look, she's credited with her approach to languages. She's credited with her revival and her introduction to the West of some of the more obscure religious ideas that come out of the East. And Krem has talked about this. In the East, they do this. In the West, they do that. And there has to be some synergy going forward. Blavatsky was a forerunner of that.
Mm.
She brought to that Western modern mindset, that Victorian mindset, that Eastern philosophy. She was one of those people that brought that back into the Western world.
Well, she and Olcott became Buddhists.
Yeah.
During their travels.
Yeah, quite an esoteric form of Buddhism, which Olcott, I think it was Olcott, finally called esoteric Buddhism.
Mm.
And Krem has talked about esoteric Buddhism, and he thinks it's probably the more accurate form of Buddhism with relation to what the Buddha actually taught. So, yeah, they're a really interesting person, but you've got to be able to sift through this this disregard that she got from her society at large.
Yes, well, I mean, let's face it, the Western thinking needed a big shake-up. It needed, because, you know, it was just so materialistic.
But when we look at one of our other fourth-degree initiates, the man called Jesus, was he loved by everybody at all times?
Not at all.
Not at all.
No.
And did he bring an important message for this new age? Yes.
Mm.
So fourth-degree initiate, I don't want to be it. I'm going to go to three and skip the fourth degree and go right to five. Yeah.
Because nothing wrong with that, John.
because you have to endure a good dose of persecution.
And, you know, as we talked about in the last program, the fourth-degree initiate cops everything. Because they have to drop everything.
Yeah.
They have to let go of everything. And one of the things I love about Blavatsky is she clearly did that because, as her biographers have said, Williams said, you know, she was allowed, she talked incessantly in a guttural voice.
Yeah.
She sometimes wittily and sometimes crudely, you know. She just, I mean, she must have been a powerhouse of everything that everybody else wasn't doing.
Would be interesting to know what she was the previous life, wouldn't it? Because that would have been,
if we get a chance,
building up for that.
Krem has said she's incarnated again as a young boy in Leningrad.
Okay.
So if we get a chance, I'll have a look. But for our listeners, Krem mentions Blavatsky only briefly in all of the Maitreya's Missions books, Volume 1, 2, and 3, and I've picked some of that out when we'll try and cover that off later.
In 1888, John, after The Secret Doctrine was published, she established the Blavatsky Lodge in England with 13 members, with Annie Besant.
Yes.
She had a near-death experience there. Gandhi visited that lodge.
Yes.
And appointed Besant as the president of the Blavatsky Lodge. She died aged 59.
Yeah.
What a lifetime.
Yes.
So in less than 60 years, she died in 1891, aged 59 in London. And what a lot of people don't know about her was when she first, she was always travelling, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Mm.
What a lot of people don't know about Blavatsky was in her earlier visits to Britain and in London, she was a musician and part of the London Philharmonic Orchestra.
Oh, good heavens, never knew that.
Multi-talented.
The other thing that people that reported on her, predominantly men that reported on her, would not believe was the extent of her travelling.
Mm.
They couldn't accept that a woman could have travelled to the parts of the world that Blavatsky did, particularly Tibet. Her conversations around being in Tibet probably garnered her in her early days the most ridicule because men of the time could not imagine a woman travelling to Tibet.
Yes, well, you know, she was travelling through Asia. She travelled through Turkey, Persia, Afghanistan, into India and Tibet. And while riding a horse in 1864 in Georgia near the Black Sea, she fell off a horse, as you can imagine, because she was probably carrying too much weight. And was in a coma for several months with a spinal fracture. So, you know, there's the fourth degree initiate again, you know, like, you know, in a coma for months, a near death experience, 18 months out from finally dying. Yeah. So, you know, she was going through a rough time. She's wheelchair bound for the last 3 years.
But also, the thing that struck me about Blavatsky, and it reminded me of Benjamin Krem, is that these hardworking initiates push themselves to burnout, don't they? Krem did so much that, you know, he literally burnt himself out. He was blind at the end of his life, which must have been incredibly difficult for an artist.
Yes, yes, that must have been heartbreaking. You're talking about a busy initiate burning himself out. Look at that 86-year-old politician in America at the moment, Bernie Sanders.
How's he doing it?
How does he do it,
John? When you compare his cognitive process to that of the other 80-year-old politician in America,
he's as sharp as a tack.
Bernie, he's incredible. Anyway, Blavatsky, a fourth-degree initiate, which we knew, died at 59, as you've said, Nigel. Soul one, Peter, stunning. Personality was two, mental one, astral six, and physical body three.
See, she had a race seven on the personality subray, which, you know, is obviously part of Russia, of course, is race seven. And but it was interesting to see Helena Rorick and Blavatsky had virtually exactly the same race structure,
which Krem was asked about, and he said coincidence, just coincidence.
Just they were the right vehicles at the time.
And as you've mentioned before, Nigel, those three Russian women, and Krem has said just coincidence.
Yeah.
Just coincidence.
Yeah, right.
Peter in the corner, not convinced.
Well, the soul knows.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, whatever.
and incidentally, Alice Bailey, who was a British writer.
Yes.
Theosophist. She had two what Ray ones in her makeup as well, Peter.
Yes, that's right. You
but
know,
hey, hold on.
Personality and mental. Ray
but
one.
Ray one breaks down. Right? Stalin broke down. These people coming through are breaking down our thought forms on this planet at the moment. So therefore they need Ray one.
That's right.
To come through and be destructive and break down the thought forms that and particularly that astral
that
we are enthralled with. So it's got to be a critical component.
Yeah. It's interesting that we don't actually know a full Ray 1, you know, Ray 1 only sort of thing. I mean, they're a sub-ray of Ray 2 because it's too powerful.
Yeah.
You know, probably the planet would disintegrate. I don't know.
Yeah, Stalin was interesting. He was a strong Ray 1 as well, wasn't he?
Yes, that's right. He had had a Ray 1 personality and a Ray 1 mental, Ray 7, I mean, Ray 7 personality, Ray 7 mental, and he was a Ray 1 soul. Mm. So you can see the drive there, the destructiveness. You know, we've got to change things.
Yeah.
We've got to bring the peasants of Russia up into the 20th century.
Peter, what can you tell us about the seventh ray soul? Because Blavatsky was from Russia.
Yes.
And, of course, the seventh ray soul, that governs the nation's ultimate spiritual destiny, doesn't it?
That's right. Russia is a ray seven soul, and it's somewhat unusual. But, you know, as Benjamin Krem has said, that it's possibly a new religion will come out of Russia, more scientific and more up-to-date, if you like, rather than straight Christianity.
So as John intimated earlier, it's no accident that Blavatsky and Helena Rorick two key writers, two key people involved in theosophy and bringing through the information from the masters through.
That's right.
Both from Russia.
Yes,
from, and from very affluent backgrounds.
That's right.
That's why Blavatsky was able to travel.
Yeah.
Because when her father died,
she inherited
a lot enough money for her to continue all her travels.
Mm.
The master Hilarion, that's another master that Blavatsky was engaged with as well.
Yes.
So when you have said over the years that she met the masters, it wasn't just in India.
No.
It was in Tibet and it was also in Europe.
Yes.
And Turkey.
Mm. Yeah.
What a lifetime.
What I find intriguing is that she was the starting point for Krishnamurti.
Right.
You know, because
introduced him to the world.
Because of her relationship with Annie Besant, that's where Krishnamurti, that's the effort that went in to find Krishnamurti.
And all his training.
And you know, I would love to know the conversations that Blavatsky and Annie Besant had about finding the vehicle for Maitreya. There must have been some conversations.
Oh, that's right. And, of course, they were able to do out-of-body stuff as well, so, you know, consciously.
Mm.
So it's just absolutely amazing. I mean, I see the great invocation that we use all the time is actually a seventh ray invocation.
Oh.
So it is the timely for the Aquarian age, obviously, but also for the Russian nation.
But aren't we due, Peter, for the seventh ray to come back into incarnation?
Yeah, it is coming in. It is part of the Aquarian age.
Yeah.
It is.
Yep.
And this is the forerunner of it, the great invocation. Thank you.